CB Shuckin' Jive.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet, I mean clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through History.
Race fans, welcome to another edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder, and I'm here to be your host. Thank you all for coming tonight. We appreciate it. More than you know. We really do. We mean it. Say hello, folks. Take it away, panel, while I get this video up on the
cool site. Jeff, you go ahead and do it, and we'll fill the airwaves with something.
Something.
I don't know whether it may even vaguely resemble racing stuff.
We can talk about Tim since he's not here.
That's right. We can talk about Tim since he's not going to be here tonight. Yeah. Do we have a Cody tonight?
No Cody tonight.
Tim and Cody in the same place? Yeah. What's going on?
No.
Are the troops deserting?
I don't know.
Cody has a flat tire, and Tim has gone to some sort of grandchild function.
Never mind. Something about Ford.
I wonder if Cody has good years like Kyle Busch is fussing about.
Well, I'm led to believe that all he drives is Fords, although I don't know what kind of tires he puts on them. So
Ford tires.
Huh? Ford tires?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's even more. I mean, that could be not good.
This could be Blue Oval night at the Racers Goat Reunion.
It could be.
Blue Oval, they're dominating NASCAR.
They sure.
And they said they want it to dominate this year. They want a championship. Well.
I'll tell you what, this is the way to do it. Win every race. Win every race, you'll get there.
They certainly started out that way.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it'll last, because when the TRD people see that they are being stepped on, they may step up to the plate a little tighter. But, I'm sure that there's been a whole lot of talk.
TRD people was out to lunch Sunday.
Yes, they were.
I mean, Kyle Busch was two laps down, never even got on the TV screen.
And that's just absolutely.
And somehow, through a miracle, Matt Kenseth finally got back in contention there right at the end and wound up with the top five. But for the most part, they were non-existent.
Yeah.
Well, most of the field was non-existent, except for Kevin Harvick. I mean, he was so dominant. It was just unbelievable.
Well, what about Denny Hamlin burning up a rear wheel bearing?
Yep.
I mean, that's almost unheard of in today's race cars.
Yeah, that was rare. But that also illustrated the additional nuances to NASCAR's pit policy procedures this year. For those of us who were fuzzy around all the edges, if you have a mechanical problem, you can go into the pits, into the garage area, work on it, and so on and so forth. And there's no penalty. Because later on in the race, Ryan Newman had a dead battery.
Yep.
And they both went to the garage to fix it. I was very relieved, because when Denny Hamlin pulled in, I incorrectly assumed that was the end of his day. And somebody else apparently expressed that opinion in the broadcast booth, and they began to clarify it. They said that for a mechanical problem, there is no penalty, there is no re-entry, no trip to the infield care center. You just go in and fix it and come back out.
But it was also interesting with the Toyotas that they couldn't change the battery on pit road. They had to jack the car up.
Well,
and on the children's cars too, they had to jack.
Yeah, maybe it was children's cars.
It was children's cars. Really high.
Somebody came back with the
It was the broadcast panel. That
yeah, one of the broadcasters came back with the thought that something had been said about some of the cars being redesigned weight distribution wise, and they apparently correctly assumed that they had lowered the battery placement on the car to change the a battery is a pretty heavy piece, to slightly change the weight distribution on the car. And the only downside to that is if you have to change it, now you have to get the car way high in the air to get apparently the door off and change it from the bottom rather than from the end.
Also, they speculated that there's a lot of mumbo-jumbo going on with the undersides of cars aerodynamically, and apparently that's an area that NASCAR is not they're still leaving them some leeway, the underside, and there may be something. I mean, everybody has their own idea of how to do that, and the battery placement on the children's cars may have figured into all that maneuvering also, which that's possible too. So that was a little window into what might be going on where.
Yeah, I was really pleased though to find that that if you suffered a mechanical problem, such as both the 31 and the 11 suffered, that there is no automatically out of the race penalty from NASCAR. You just go into the garage and fix it.
I still think they're going to change that rule a little bit as we go forward. I think they'll add more time.
Even some of the commentators seem to think that they needed to. One of them said they needed to add at least 2 minutes to the clock because you lose pretty close to that getting to your pit stall and away from it.
Exactly.
Which means now you only have, instead of having 5 minutes, you only have 3 minutes of actual work time on the car. So that to me is they need to do something. Either start the clock when your car stops in your pit stall or add some time to the total stop time.
Yeah,
either one would accomplish the same thing, I guess.
So what about the pit road speeding penalties?
Well, at least 9 different penalties addressed on that in Sunday's race.
Yeah, they said they changed where they check it and added more points.
I believe 3 or 4 different check points,
whatever they call them.
Martin, he tweeted after the race. He said that the first couple of loops or first couple of points or whatever were too close together. It's the time between points.
Yes,
is how it's not necessarily miles per hour, but you've only got so many seconds to get from point A to point B, and if you exceed that, then you're speeding under this system. And it makes sense. He said that those the first couple of loops were physically too close together. There was no way not to go through them without hardly speeding. So that made sense if that's the way it works. And not all those points, apparently it's not uniform. There's different distances because at some point they can actually go faster because the loops are further apart or something. It's
all very scientific, and the thing that makes me the most angry about it,
mad?
imagine that, is the fact that they keep it close to the vest. We can't see any information, so we have to take NASCAR's word for it. Well, what's to keep somebody in the NASCAR booth from fudging on it a split second, giving this one a speeding penalty and that one not?
One of the competitors said, and it might have been Jimmy Johnson who got called twice for speeding. He said the red light barely came on my dashboard. So obviously they've got the car programmed into the system. You know, you run it until the red light comes on.
The tachometer
flickers red. You get. Slow down.
Right. You're already past it.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Our fans when it flickers.
But somebody in the booth said that it was not a very exact science, and anybody that's ever tried to drive a car without using the speedometer and only using the tachometer will know that very thing. First off, they're slower to react than a speedometer, and not nearly as accurate as far as being able to control down to the last mile an hour. Because pit road speed is 45 miles an hour, I think, in Atlanta. They allow them 5, which means that the top end is 50. Not 50 and a hundredths, but 50. And apparently they monitor it that closely. I don't know what the increment over, but apparently anything that registers over whatever their maximum speed plus the allowable percentage, they get a speeding penalty. And you can't just let it go and ignore it, but it looks to me like they're micromanaging the race. Let them get out there and race. Don't decide it on pit road.
Yeah. I mean, it's same for everybody.
Well,
when it rains on everybody. Well, same deal.
You would like to think that it's the same for everybody, but given NASCAR's history of favoritism, I'm not sure that's true. I would like to think that they administer it the same for everybody, but I think everybody sitting around this table knows that that's not necessarily the truth.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, you don't.
No.
Well, you're not sitting around a table.
I'm going to read the legendorial.
All right. Read the legendorial.
I'm going to read the legendorial. Tim Leeming's not here tonight, and he asked me to read the legendorial. And it's the March 7th, 2017 legendorial titled No More. Okay. When I was 5 months old, my parents moved from upstate New York to South Carolina, and I rode all the way in my mother's lap, carsick all the way, in a 1936 or 37 Plymouth Coupe. Okay, Tim, which one was it? I took my driver's test in a 1959 Plymouth. My first car was a 1952 Plymouth. The first car I ever drove was my uncle's 32 Plymouth, Hot Rod. I drove my first race in a Plymouth. In all those milestones, Plymouth was part of my life. They don't make Plymouths anymore. When my Uncle Bobby died 3 years ago, this past October, he left me a silver 2005 Mercury Grand Marquis for use in my travels for racing adventures. It's an awesome car, comfortable to drive, and gets good gas mileage. In fact, it got 28 miles per gallon on the Daytona trip a couple of weeks ago. It's a V8. It's a great car, and knowing it belonged to the uncle who introduced me to stock car racing makes it even more special. They don't make Mercuries anymore. There was a time when Pontiac ruled the NASCAR Grand National, later Winston Cup Circuit, and I even owned several Pontiacs over the period of my time. My favorite, over my period of time, my favorite was driving Pontiacs. They don't make Pontiacs anymore. Going back further, the Hudson Hornet, or more accurately, the fabulous Hudson Hornet, once claimed win after win on the NASCAR tracks. They don't make Hudson Hornets anymore. Being someone who enjoys music, especially when driving, I installed the 8-track player in my car as soon as they came out, and I had a collection of 8-track tapes to fill the trunk. They don't make 8-track players or tapes anymore. For several years, I had vehicles with 6 disc changers for CDs where I could load it and be good for at least 300 miles before I had to change the disc. They don't make those anymore. You can't even special order one because I've tried. Ever tried changing a disc while driving 75 miles an hour? May as well be texting. There's a never-ending list of items, cars, clothes, foods, and all kinds of things I have grown up using they simply don't make anymore. Never a really good reason for not making those things. They just don't. I guess it's not for me to understand. I used to think they didn't make young people with passion for racing such as I had. Let me start that over. I used to think they didn't make young people with a passion for racing such as I had when I was younger. But right here at Racers Reunion, we know there are because of Alex and Cody. If you check out my social media page, you will see hundreds of young people with passion. Whether or not it's as intense as my passion, or Bopper's, or Jack's, or Hughes, or Jeff's, I can't be sure, because I think the issue of passion is now a different thing. Alex is passionate about the history and cares little or nothing about today's racing. Cody's passionate about the history, but is also entrenched in what's happening today.
Another thing we don't seem to have much of anymore is time. That's why I'm cutting this legendorial very short, because Cody started an interesting piece last week, rushed as he was, and I want him to have the time tonight to do justice to his efforts. So go for it, Cody. You are the man. And as you know by now, Cody is not here tonight. So anyway, thanks for leaving him that much time, Tim, and thanks for yet another legendorial.
Maybe they don't have internet in Dawsonville anymore.
Anymore. Things to ponder in today's world. So, now it's time for Hugh's views on the news.
Well,
Hugh, what's in the news? What are your views?
My views are kind of have been already expressed in our opening little chat while you were getting us set up.
The cranky part, or which part was it?
Just the new rules package in general.
Okay.
As most of you race fans know, that they have a new aero package that was first used last year once at Michigan and then rolled out again at Atlanta this past weekend. And in my opinion, which is that and now a dollar will buy you a small coffee.
Not anymore.
At McDonald's?
No more.
When did the sale go off? Anyway, it appeared to me, at least, to work quite well. I've already heard some people say, well, they thought it was kind of ho-hum. They weren't pack racing. They weren't bump drafting, but they were racing for the whole 500 miles. It wasn't nail-biter sitting on the edge of your seat, but I guess those days are all gone forever. But I thought, in my humble opinion, that it was a pretty dang good race. Harvick sort of stunk up the show, but at least somebody got out front besides Kyle Busch and stunk up the show. And as much as I don't like Fords, Fords has kind of put it on them this year, which is really refreshing to see, at least from the competition standpoint, that Ford's back in it. They have not been for quite some time, and I'm sure the people at Ford are ecstatic that they're back in the game. I think it's going to make for an interesting racing season, because Toyota and General Motors are going to get on their horse and start working big time, and we may see some of the best competition this season that we've seen in many years. But we've already talked about the speeding tickets, and the one team was penalized, a big penalty, because somebody let his foot slip and he crossed a white line. Oh, too many people over the wall. Go back to the end of the longest line, which basically put that driver out of competition for anything like a top 10 finish. I think NASCAR is micromanaging pit road too much. It seems like that the races now are won or lost on whether or not you have any pit road violations rather than how fast your car is or how good your driver is. And I really do hate to see that. I realize that you have to have some sort of rules on pit road. There have been people killed on pit road for cars getting out of control and running into pit crew members, and I understand that you have to have some sort of rules, but in my opinion they are micromanaging it to the point that the only thing that we've got is whether or not you can survive a race without any penalties. That puts you at least in the top 10 just because you survived without a penalty. To me, the race ought to be won or lost on the track.
But, so we should be allowed to cheat in the pits?
No. We ought to take the pits out of the race. I have contended for a long time, and all the rest of y'all poo-pooed me, but I still say it.
So you're saying we should be allowed to cheat in the race, the pits?
Well, they did for 50 years.
They cheated on the track, too, for 50 years.
Yep, exactly. And we had some damn good racing. But now they've tried to equalize everything and micromanage everything with lasers and all kinds of electronic equipment to the point to where there's not a whole lot of racing out there anymore. It's just driving around and around and around. And who survives without a pit road speeding penalty or somebody letting their foot slip across a white line and being penalized 30 spots for it? To me, that's not what the race ought to be about.
I found a picture, and it's in my gallery on Racers Reunion, and I can't remember which car it was and which pit crew it was. But there was a picture of a guy with still 1 foot hooked behind the wall, and his foot was on the surface, and his hand was on the car, and he was talking to the driver, but 1 foot was still hooked over the wall.
I have seen that picture.
Yeah.
It's quite old, but it was a perfect example. Yes, he was not over the wall.
But he was pushing the rule to the limit.
Yep,
what they've always done in on the track and in the pits, you know. So, yeah, I hear you. I just like to argue with you.
Well, I know it.
He couldn't have done much more than talk, though.
No, because
taking that hand off,
he was stretched as far as he could possibly stretch, and maybe then so. And he had to have been a 6-footer, or he wouldn't have made that. Yes, I remember seeing that picture, and I thought, man, yeah, that's wanting to be on pit road and abiding by the rules about stretching it about as far as you could.
Yeah, I'm gonna see if I can find the picture here and put it up for folks in a minute. But no, I hear you loud and clear, Hugh. And I think, you know, the whole thing has gotten down to where they have to micromanage it.
Oh yeah,
because the crews are so smart, man. Everything, these guys are geniuses that are running these teams now, and they found everything that you can possibly imagine. And for NASCAR to keep up with them, they got to micromanage it. But you can't leave the pits just wide open for them to do whatever they want to do in the pits, or they'd be cheating like crazy in there, man.
Well, my contention is kind of like the truck series was back when you were running it. You have an intermission. Excuse me. And your pit stop doesn't necessarily count in the race. When you pull in the pits, you have an allotted time. Two minutes, three minutes, whatever.
That may be coming.
A specific amount of time. They don't care what repairs you make or what you do within that length of time, but you're going to be out for 70 seconds, whatever the allotted amount of time. And everybody gets the same.
And this is not just because I'm trying to take the opposite side with you. I like having what happens on pit as part of the result.
I do, too.
I hear you, and I understand that. But in my opinion, it's become too much about what happens on pit road and not nearly as much as the driver.
Well, yeah, but what about what's happening at the shop? What is it? Richard Childress has got like 35 engineers or something?
More than that. That someone Sunday.
Or was it 35 more engineers than you just
70
heard?
Engineers for one team.
Yeah.
70. Can you imagine that? Ask Dave Marcus how many crew members he had.
Well, I don't know how you could get 70 engineers to pull in the same direction. I mean, that sounds impressive, but as a practical matter, you couldn't get 70 people to agree with nothing.
Yeah.
They're probably not agreeing. They're probably specific to a certain area of the car.
A shock absorber.
Yeah.
A front end.
That may be counterproductive. It sounds good. But
you know, talk about the cost of racing.
Yes.
Bud, that's accelerates the cost of racing big time.
I just put that picture up on chat that I was talking about, guys.
Yep.
If you want to see it, you can look at it there. That's a Ford, what, a 60?
About a 64, maybe?
Yeah.
Making it bigger, I can't tell who it is.
But
where is it?
Pearson Pitting, could be Michigan. Big man with the tire, Mr. Dan Ford, Dick Hutchardson talking to Pearson. There you go. That's what I love about this stuff, man. Somebody posted on this picture, because I put on there, call this stop, okay? So Stacy Morgan, 9 years ago, Stacy Morgan put on there, that's Pearson, probably at Michigan. The big man with the tires, Dan Ford, and Dick Hutchardson is the guy with his foot hooked over the wall. It's on the chat.
It's on the chat.
And then somebody else put 8 years ago, no, that's Tiny Lund and Bill Francis Talladega during Talladega.
I could believe.
And that is Talladega.
Look at the stands. Yeah, that's probably Talladega.
That's Talladega.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that looks like Tiny sitting in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a 69. That might have been the first race.
Yeah. That's the boycott race.
Yeah.
This is the boycott race, because that's actually where these pictures came from. I can't tell the source, but
yeah, that would have been the.
That's hey, I heard something interesting yesterday or the day before or sometime that this week that currently Michael Waltrip's got more points than Dale Earnhardt and Jimmy Johnson so far this season.
Well, that may be definitely
it is
true.
Well, I assume it is true.
Them two haven't got a lot to crow about.
I know, point. Exactly.
Well, and who has the most? Is it Harvick has the most points?
Yeah, Harvick yeah. leads the points. Yeah.
And did not and has not won either one of the races. Right. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Which but Bobby and I were talking about.
But he's
that.
Won segments and he's,
yeah, he's won segments. He's, and
exactly.
He's dominated. That's and what he ought to be leading.
That's what we
I
were
hope
talking
he doesn't
about
win,
this morning.
But he ought to be leading.
Yeah. Well, that's gets back to who you're pulling for, yeah. But yeah. My only concern there, and as I suppose as the season wears on, it won't be an issue. But you remember when Kenseth won without winning a race or only one, and then years ago Terry Labonte won a championship without winning a race, and Darrell Waltrip screamed for years after that he was robbed, he was robbed, he was robbed. But they changed the rules, and Kenseth took advantage of it and won the championship, and Waltrip did not.
Well, you got to play by the rules as they are.
Well, yeah, because after they changed the system, they claimed that Jeff Gordon would have won two more championships that he didn't win because they changed the points award system. So, yeah, you have to play by the rules. What, like the rules or not, that's the rules that are in place, and that's what you know. Yep. That NASCAR has all of the cards, and if you want to play their game, you've got to play it by their rules.
It's their circus. They get to choose the clowns.
Exactly.
All right. It's now time for the Carolina Race Place Historic Race Finish, brought to you in part by Bobby's Auto Parts in Charlotte, North Carolina, home of the Endless Warranty. This news coming to you from the archives of the CarolinaRaceplace.zoomshare.com website by Mr. Jack Walker, who is, in fact, the ambassador from Hand, South Carolina.
Okay.
A suburb of Walmart.
It pays just as good as this job. All right, folks.
Not as many perks, though, man.
I've had the 35 analysts at the Carolina Race Place working in the archives, and we've come up with another one tonight.
A team of analysts.
Team of analysts.
Just hired 35 more analysts.
Yeah, 35, man. All right.
To join
tonight,
the other 35.
We are going to Charlotte, North Carolina, Charlotte Motor Speedway. 100-mile late model sportsman race, May 27th, 1978. You, I'm sure you were there for that one.
I probably was.
A 100-mile, 67-lap late model sportsman race was held at Charlotte Motor Speedway the day before the World 600 on May 27th, 1978. This was not as well known a race as the World Service Life 300 that's held on the day before the National 500 in October. Bob Presley of Asheville, North Carolina, won the pole position driving a Pontiac. His fast lap was 157.311 miles per hour around the mile and a half banked speedway. Starting on the outside front row was Dick Brooks of Porterville, California, driving a Ford. When the race got underway in front of 49,000 fans on Saturday, wouldn't NASCAR like that today, Dick Brooks took the lead. On lap 24, dirt track driver Charlie Blanton of Gaffney, South Carolina, had an engine problem in his toy Bolton Pontiac and was done for the day. During the early part of the race, Dale Earnhardt and Bob Presley also took turns leading. On lap 37, Buddy Howard of Greenville, South Carolina, hit the wall hard. Howard was rushed to the hospital before later being released with minor problems. At the time of the accident, Bob Presley was leading, but ducked into the pits under the caution flag on lap 42. The new leader was Morgan Shepherd as Presley came out of the pits in the seventh position. Presley was on a charge to the front. On lap 59, he caught and passed Sheppard to retake the lead. Bob Presley clearly had the fastest car as he was outpacing the rest of the field. On lap 63, with four laps to go in the race, Presley's Pontiac blew an engine. Morgan Sheppard retook the lead again and held it to the checkered flag on lap 67. Jack Ingram finished second. Coming to the checkered flag on the final lap, Dick Brooks driving the Jimmy Dunlavy Ford passed Satch Worley and Dale Earnhardt to finish third. Morgan Sheppard won $4,000 for the victory from the $30,000 purse. This was Sheppard's first Super Speedway victory. So here's the way they finished. Charlotte Motor Speedway, Concord, North Carolina, 100-mile late model sportsman race, May 27th, 1978. The winner, driving the number 7, Morgan Sheppard from Conover, North Carolina, in a Pontiac, followed by the number 94 of Jack Ingram, Asheville, North Carolina, in a Ford, number 90, Dick Brooks, Portersville, California, in a Ford, number 47, Satch Worley, Rocky Mount, Virginia, in a Chevrolet, finishing 5th, the number 80 of Dale Earnhardt, Kannapolis, North Carolina, a Chevrolet, number 16, Butch Lindley, Greenville, South Carolina, a Chevrolet, number 0, John Kennedy, Villa Park, Illinois, a Ford, finishing in the 8th position, the number 50 of out of the Marion Cox stable, driven by Joe Frisson, Golden Valley, Minnesota, a Mercury, followed by Bob Presley, Asheville, North Carolina, in a Pontiac, Joe Mihalik, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in an Oldsmobile, Benny Curley, Hidden Knight, North Carolina, in a Chevrolet, Mike Porter, Princeton, West Virginia, in a Chevrolet, Nelson Oswald, Jamestown, North Carolina, in a Chevrolet, Joe Michaels, Baltimore, Maryland, in a Chevrolet, Steve Lawrence, Lenoir, North Carolina, a Chevrolet, finished 15th, Delma Coward, Savannah, Georgia, a Chevrolet. He's out looking for a party, I'm sure.
Number 0.
Number 09, actually, in this race. Followed by Tom Foley, Morganton, North Carolina, a Chevrolet. Bobby Fisher, Vero Beach, Florida, on a Pontiac. Dr. Bob Jarvis, out of Greenville, South Carolina, a Ford. Finishing 20th, Jim Poovey, Hickory, North Carolina, a Chevrolet. Followed by Harry Gant, Taylorsville, North Carolina, in a Chevrolet. Buddy Howard, Greenville, South Carolina, Pontiac. Tommy Houston, Conover, North Carolina, a Pontiac. Randall Fowler, Greenville, South Carolina, a Chevrolet. Charlie Blanton, Gaffney, South Carolina, a Pontiac. J.D. McDuffie came in 26th from Sanford, North Carolina, in a Chevrolet. Glenn Jarrett, Newton, North Carolina, a Mercury. Bobby Walwack, Villa Park, Illinois, a Chevrolet. Earl Brooks, Lynchburg, Virginia, in a Chevrolet. Ed Bogus, Wilkesboro, North Carolina, in a Chevrolet. And the 31st and final car, Keith Newbern, Lawrenceville, Georgia, in a Chevrolet. So this race was kind of just one of those races they had as a pre-race, as a lead up to the World 600. Wasn't a big deal. I couldn't even find a title sponsor for it. It's only 100 miles, so it was a pretty short race.
About, what, 67 laps.
Yeah. So.
This was before Dale Earnhardt had got his big break.
Yep.
1978, he was racing at Myrtle Beach.
Yep.
And won the track championship that year.
Anything else grab you, Bobby, on that?
Well, those were all Saturday night drivers.
Yeah, mostly.
Every
yeah.
one of them was, Morgan Sheppard, that old car was a Pontiac Ventura.
Yep. That's when the Venturas were pretty hot.
Yep, it was number 7, probably.
It was number 7, according to information I've got here.
I don't have anything to prove it, but I'm pretty sure I was at that race. Yeah.
And the thing of those guys, though, they were all Saturday night drivers, but they were all very well-known Saturday nighters.
Yeah, that's because most of these drivers drove the same cars on the short tracks.
And Charlie Blanton, who drove at Gaffney, which is, you know, just right across the line there in South Carolina. But it was a dirt track. Here he was driving it at Charlotte.
He was driving the number 00 at Pontiac. I don't think that was a Thomas Brothers. Was that after Thomas Brothers, maybe?
78, they should have been.
Well, did they ever have Pontiacs? I know they had Chevrolets.
That's a good question. I don't ever remember that.
Yeah, I don't either.
That combination. But see, now the I guess the equivalent to Xfinity, you don't know none of the drivers in there. Don't read it.
Well,
they don't ring no bell.
Now you got specially built cars for the big speedways. They don't run on the half mile bull rings, you know, leading up to the race and that kind of thing. Most of these guys in North Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina, Virginia.
Yeah, and the next Saturday night they was back at some bull ring track somewhere else.
Yeah, they're running Myrtle Beach or
wherever,
Hickory or somewhere like that, Greenville.
Yeah. So that whole element, for whatever it's worth, that whole dimension is absolutely gone, and I don't know that you could get back. I mean, the whole thing has diversified so and changed so much that's just.
I mean, now there's some speculation that the Cup Series may run more road courses and that kind of thing. If they want to stir up interest, they need to go back to some of the short tracks.
Saturday night tracks.
Yeah.
I have read that, Jack, and where is this coming from? Who is pushing for road courses?
I know.
For more road courses.
I mean, that's beyond me. That's like this muffler thing we were talking about earlier. I mean, some of this I just don't get. But
I'd be pushing for more Saturday night short track participation rather than more road courses.
I think it's no one denies at this point that they did for a long time, but this year there's no one trying to deny the fact that perhaps something is wrong at NASCAR. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much out in the open.
They're searching. They're throwing things against the wall, as the expression goes, to see what's going to stick.
For years, they denied that there was a problem.
Well, that's that's a big plus or a big leap forward to just know that NASCAR has finally admitted openly that they do have a problem.
Yeah. And
maybe they'll fix it.
Yeah. And I think Monster Energy's got a problem also, because they've got such a long title sponsor, Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series, that it's happening exactly what I thought was going to happen. A lot of the commentators are now calling it the NASCAR Cup Series. They're leaving off the Monster Energy part.
Well,
it's so long.
To me, it ought to be the Monster Energy Cup.
Yeah.
The Monster Cup.
Yeah, the Monster Cup would be simple. Sprint Cup,
Winston Cup. Duh.
Pay attention on some of the broadcast and news things you hear. They're called the NASCAR Cup.
And that's,
NASCAR Series. NASCAR
somebody needs to jerk their chain, because that's not doing their title sponsor any favors at all. If they want to shorten it, Monster Energy Cup or Monster Cup.
Yeah.
Well, the litmus test of all this stuff we've been talking about, the litmus test is this. Fox yesterday drew a 3.6 overnight for the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series race from Atlanta, down slightly from a 3.7 for the same race last year. However, the second race of the Cup Series season was down from a 5.1 in 2015 from Atlanta, and down from a 4.8 when Phoenix was the second race of the year in 2014. This is interesting right here. I didn't know this. The second race of the season, the second race of the NASCAR season, previously it has been at Phoenix, it's been Fontana, and heaven forbid, it was for way back in the Stone Age, it was at Rockingham. Has traditionally been NASCAR's biggest TV draw outside of Daytona.
Always.
Did anybody
playing
know
off
that?
The hype of Daytona.
Did anybody know that little fact?
No, but it sort of stands to reason that there's so much hype for Daytona, and there's so much interest generated that it carries over. Oh, I can't wait to see the next race.
I remember in 1979 going to Rockingham for the second race of the year, and before getting close to the track, some rednecks had a bed sheet strung beside the road. It said, "Welcome to Rockingham, round two." That was the year after, you know, after yeah. all the Allisons and Cale had fouled in Daytona. Said Rockingham round two, so that was the second.
See, you got all hyped up about Daytona. You got to watch it. You couldn't wait to get to the racetrack. Rockingham was next. Didn't matter if it was 20 degrees.
And it was. There was snow on the ground that day, but we didn't care. We were crazy.
Well, he hit upon something else that might have gone by some of you. And that's the fact that there was a bed sheet strung between two trees. There was
with black spray paint, right?
All kinds of local fan interest.
Oh, absolutely. It,
going up 29 or down 29 in my case to Charlotte, house after house after house would have some. If it wasn't anything but a banner that they had gotten from the racetrack said, "Welcome, race fans." But there was stuff in everybody's front yard. There were homemade signs. There was stuff that they had gotten from left over from race previous races. But there was all kinds of fan interest and local interest in the track and the races that were upcoming. And it's just gone. It's left.
My favorite one was there was a weigh-in. I can't remember the highway, I think it was 402 or something like that, going into Darlington from I-20, going into Grandstand B in the old days. You'd get close to the racetrack, and all of a sudden, on the left-hand side of the road, you'd see this house trailer that was painted blue and yellow for Dale Earnhardt, and the mailbox had a big old number 3 on it.
If you've ever painted your house.
The whole house trailer was painted.
Well, and remember when you got to the track, there were dozens and dozens of old school buses on the infield. This, of course, was long before the motor home got to be real popular. But there were all of these old school buses that were converted into race vehicles the guys took to the racetrack. And every one of them were painted in some sort of racing colors. They were painted up for a sponsor. They were painted up for a car. And there was even one family, and there was some reference on the hood as to the house divided. One side, I mean, it was right down the middle. One side was a black number 3, and the other side was a Rusty Wallace. And I thought, it kind of reminds you of some of the basketball and football rivalries that you hear of. And that's gone, unfortunately, now. But that used to be so much of the part of going to the races is to see all of the flags and the painted paint jobs and the T-shirts and all of the hoopla that went on before the race and all of the fan interest. And unfortunately, a lot of that died when they decided to ship the rednecks off the infields. They raised the prices and took their Confederate flags away from them. And now they've kind of pooped in their hat.
All right, that's a good segue. Bopper.
Yeah, we've left you with the dregs.
We've only got 15 minutes.
Go for it, Bobby.
No need to stop.
You can handle it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's hard to follow. Poop in the hat, but go for it.
Speaking of pooping in the hat, Bopper, it's your turn, buddy.
Oh. No need to stop it. Gosh, I was going to say something now. I forgot what it was. Speaking of, we were talking earlier about how this is certainly Ford has come out swinging in 2017. And I don't, honestly, there ain't many drivers left in of the caliber of Kevin Harvick right now.
No.
Up and down the line. I mean, there ain't a lot of experience out of his level anymore at the moment. Maybe Kyle Busch, maybe Jimmy Johnson, maybe Matt Kenseth, Keselowski, other than that.
Well, he just ain't about 5.
Well, that's still.
Yeah.
But time in and time out, he's going to be strong. This ain't.
He's definitely going to be strong. And it's surprising that the Stuart Haas has been able to do that with the Ford changing manufacturers over the winter,
Well, I agree. I think everybody was waiting to see how all that's going to pan out, and they expected it to eventually gel. Nobody thought it would happen instantly. But even among them, he's the rest of them ain't running like he is.
No. Nope.
So part of it is Kevin. Yep. And Chase Elliott said something in his after the race interview, which I thought was very insightful. He said, I don't think Kevin Harvick really had a faster car than I did, but the way he was driving it, he was letting off early, coasting in, getting on the gas, staying on the bottom, doing this, doing that, being easy on the tires, and going fast all at the same time. He said he was doing all of that. That was him, not just the car. And I think there's a lot of truth in that.
But during the broadcast, there were several comments made about various drivers listening to various drivers' radios, and the spotters especially. You know, watch Harvick mimic what he does, and more than one driver said, "I can't do that."
Yeah,
I'm watching him, but I can't do what he's doing.
The yellow line,
right? My car just wouldn't handle well enough to get it down to the yellow line, much less do what he's doing. Mm. So, there's no doubt that he's got the talent, and Stuart Haas has put a car under him that will showcase that talent, and unless something else comes along to change it, they're going to have a really tough time with Ford and Kevin Harvick this season. Although I'm sure that the midnight oil is burning in all of the GM and Toyota shops, wondering how can we beat him.
Well, GM ain't really got nobody.
Nope.
They got Jimmy Johnson.
They got Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott's going to win some races.
They got Jimmy Johnson has got to be the leadoff driver, and he don't like to do nothing until the last race of the year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that strategy is going to
work
this year.
It's not going to work this year unless he gets busy.
Well, because with the new format, the waiting till the last few races of the year, he'll be on the outside looking in. He won't even make the
They like to experiment the whole year, and if they do that this time, they ain't even going to make the
playoffs.
That's
right. They won't make the playoffs.
What do y'all guys make of Carl Edwards being at Atlanta with his helmet bag and helmet?
Well, did anybody actually see that, or was that just something was said? All I heard was heard that.
Well, I don't know.
He was ostensibly there to help Daniel Suarez.
Yeah, but I'm sure that's the case. But why? I mean, if he's retired, why?
Well, he may
have something else going on.
He may have been there to tutor him, and you know.
I heard he was coming back. Chrysler was going to make a team around him.
That's what we speculated about a month ago.
Him and Ray Abraham is going to come back for Chrysler.
Well,
could be.
Never say never. I find that's a very likely scenario because you keep hearing little things here and there about Chrysler. They've done some things. Now, granted, it may just be so in case something comes along, because they have submitted a car, blah, 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 and you can't just do that the last minute. You have to do that way in advance. So that it sounds like that they're at least keeping their options open. But having said that, if they really were serious about getting out of it and staying out of it, they wouldn't be doing that.
Right.
So I'd say there is some credence to something happening. Now, whether it's Carl Edwards or somebody else, who knows? But I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see Chrysler back in it for the next season. I doubt they'll come this season. I don't even know that it's possible with the all of the behind-the-scenes rules about the cars and the approvals and all the stuff that you have to – hoops that you have to jump through to get – to ever put a car on a track. But I'd say that will bear watching this season because in probably 3 or 4 months they will have to tip their hand, yeah, we're coming or no, we're not.
Yep.
But I'm surprisingly enough kind of excited about this season. Nothing huge – but enough changes.
It's going to be an interesting season
One way or the other. I was very impressed with the number of fans in the grandstand. Now, granted,
have you noticed that Bobby's got his back turned to you?
Yeah, I do.
he's trying to remember what he wanted to say while ago.
He's done that since midday yesterday, and we won't talk about that.
Somebody hijack your sex.
White flag. This is the white. We got one lap to go.
All right.
You take it away, Hughes. White flag.
Yeah, can you remember when we couldn't get him to talk? Oh, that's funny, Hugh.
I was going to say something, but now I ain't.
Yeah, be careful what you say. You might get him started again.
Yeah. All right, this was a Race at History show at one point in its life.
It was, yeah.
And there...
Well, that's yours, not mine.
Go ahead. If it's a text, read it, Bobby.
I was going to say something that's something that we all know about, and we've never talked about. None of us like Ford, for one thing. We've never talked about this, and I knew about it forever. We all did, and we just tried to ignore it. But you know, one of the biggest things that has ever been in all of racing of any kind, of every kind of racing that there is, especially NASCAR, was a company called Holman and Moody.
Oh, yeah.
And we can deny it till the cows come home. It is a miracle that any other car or anybody that wasn't in that team ever won a race.
Isn't that true, man?
Yeah. They were head and shoulders above everybody else, technology wise, and what amazed me about that, or at least this is just my opinion, was that they didn't have the best product to work with.
They did too. They what?
Well, Ford gave them stuff that you couldn't buy.
Well, they made. I mean, it was incredible. You can look at, there's a million thousand websites and pictures of Holman and Moody back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And you can look at picture after picture after picture, and it is absolutely incredible.
But, Bobby, they had competition. They had Smokey Yunick. They had...
But half the time he was working for Ford.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a miracle that the Petties won a race. Yeah. All of that effort, 100% of Holman and Moody was focused on Richard Petty in the 60s. 110, and they finally hired him. But that's the only person they had to beat was Richard Petty. And they couldn't do that with a lot of, well, they did, but they didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the incredible part of the story. You look at... They was a racing factory.
They were.
Yeah. Now, they were.
Yeah, if you wanted to get into racing, that's where you went to get stuff. It was Holman and Moody.
They had they built engines. They built cars. They was Ford racing distributor. They was everything in the world.
We ought to do a Holman and Moody show one night.
We ought to. It is. It really makes me now more impressed with the Petties than I used to be, to realize that that's
what
the Petties was basically running in their backyard.
Yeah.
Against this was the efforts of Ford Motor Company concentrated in one place. And if you was a Ford factory driver, your car come from Holman and Moody.
Didn't Cale Yarborough work in the shop there? Start sweeping floors and all kinds of stuff.
Well, if you was an aspiring race driver and you would somehow get to Charlotte and somehow get a job at Holman and Moody, whatever it was, if it was sweeping floors, that was great. That was better than being on the outside. But they was an impressive, very developed the modern race. Well, not probably.
Undoubtedly
developed the chassis that NASCAR is still using. Fundamentally, it's the very same concept that they mass produced there in Charlotte. They was there at the airport.
Yep,
and it was interesting. They put plates on all their cars on the chassis.
Waddell Wilson started out sweeping the floors there.
Well, Cale did too, I think.
Remember that guy that the Magnums from Virginia knew, that ground cams there? What was his name that we used to talk Clyde? About him all the time? Bill Magnum, and then
Bill
they
and
knew
Clyde?
Him from, his name was...
I can't remember the name.
Yeah, but he ground...
Gordon Magnum? What are you...
Magnum, Clyde?
Their name was Magnum, but they knew somebody Mangum. That worked
Mangum.
At that ground cams at Holman and Moody.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's not the guy that has the 60 whatever 67 Ford. Like,
no, I think he's passed away now.
Oh, okay. I don't know who you're talking about.
You would know if I could think of his name.
Yep, they'd recognize it immediately if either one of us, any one of us, could say it.
But this whole Ford's first effort in the racing, and this was kind of strange, was through a West Coast, the Bill Stropp team, yep, which was a West Coast deal, was Ford's racing effort in the mid '50s. Ford had misread the tea leaves on that one. They thought stock car racing was going to take off, you know, on the West Coast, and the East Coast turned out to be the Southeast.
Yeah,
became ground zero.
But then when Mercury wanted to get back in racing in 60, whatever it was, 63 or 4, all those cars were out of the West Coast. Red and white cars, Mercury's.
Yeah, those Bill Stropp.
Bill Stropp Mercury's.
Yeah. Bud Moore sort of became the Mercury coordinator during the early '60s.
Well, who was building those Mercury engines? Were those Holman Moody engines? I don't know, because I never was into Fords, but I always assumed that those Mercurys were Mercury sheet metal with Ford engines in them, because by then it was a corporate engine anyway.
So the chassis and all that, they had a standard chassis,
right,
that they had developed.
So what made a Ford or a Mercury was the sheet metal you hung on it.
Yeah, and all of it was coming through Holman and Moody,
yeah,
which was through Ford, which was smart. I mean, that's the model
that the rest of them use.
Even now, I mean, you know, Toyota's efforts is through Joe Gibbs, for example.
What was the Mopar bunch called? Was that the Ram Chargers?
That was a group of Mopar, but they were more drag racing.
Yeah,
yeah. They had all the Mopar money and engineers. And
somebody
all that
posted Larry Wallace as a cam grinder for a whole.
Yeah, that's not the one I'm thinking of. This guy was from Virginia.
Oh,
And he's the remember the dude that hit a carburetor underneath the intake.
Oh yeah,
on an old flathead. The mechanic that done that also ground cams it. I just can't think of his name.
Oh yeah, you're driving me crazy now. I remember seeing that.
You remember? There's been, yep, a lot of pictures of that, yep, of like a old one barrel carburetor underneath the intake.
Yep.
But you know, a lot of what's known about racing today on all levels, engines, chassis, the whole nine yards, was learned at Holman and Moody in the '60s.
Yep.
And it's just been refined.
Well, that's probably the reason the center of racing is in Mooresville, Charlotte area today.
Yeah.
Although for a long time it looked like it was going to be Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Yeah, and that's true. And Spartanburg sort of rivaled Charlotte there.
And despite all of NASCAR's trying to legislate it to Daytona.
Yep.
They never were able to move it away from the – and, of course, it didn't hurt anything that they had a Charlotte Motor Speedway there for a backyard test track, so to speak.
All right, that's good. We're going to wrap it. Fellas, we stretched that out, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Well, yeah, we got some good stuff there, man. I enjoyed that. Yeah, that was really good. Got Hugh all fired up.
Yep.
Cranked up, hijacking Bobby's segment. Mad as hell.
Well, hey.
Yeah, and they're riding together. Can't you just see that trip going back to Shiloh tonight?
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Usually I'd be walking, unless that's his
truck. I'm driving tonight.
Well, Bobby's liable to be walking.
Sorry, Bobby, I'll take you home, buddy. You don't want to ride with him, I'll take you home. No worries.
These pictures inside AGM.
All right, fellas, we're going to wreck and get out of here. Thanks so much for helping us put this thing together tonight, guys. We turned it into something. I liked it. I hope folks on the website and other places listening to us like it. Thank you all for tuning in to us. But as always, we'd like to say a very special thanks to the men and women in our military. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do all this. To each and every one of you, good night and God bless.
Racing through